few days ago, I was on Twitter, and I don't spend all my time on Twitter, but I'll just check into the stream every now and then. I'm told my average is 7 tweets a day, which doesn't sound like a great deal, but that appears to have 10,000 people prepared to do something about it. And I noticed one line: the dimes followed you. Okay? This was last week. The dimes. Who are the dimes? I haven't heard of them. Why are they following me? So I took a look, and it turned out that they were a band that sounded a bit like, you know, I'm old, I'm 55, I'm a retired hippie. So for me, Fleetwood Mac meant something. I remember those times, and they were good music, so I say, okay, you know, my son thinks that Iron and Wine is good. My son's 21. At least he's heard of them. But I think Fleetwood Mac good, so I'm interested. They got me hooked, saying if they're listening, if they're following me for some reason, and they think they're like Fleetwood Mac, I want to know. And I looked, you know, at the rest, saying, wow, 6,000 odd followers, so this is not a spam machine. Okay? I look, their last tweet was 88 days ago. Yeah, definitely not a spam machine. So, sounds to me like there could be someone real, something actually to do with me. Not because I follow some socio-economic grouping or have the right number of letters in my name. That for someone who looks that quiet, 88 days of not with 6,000 followers, I mean 6,000 today is chump change in Twitter, you know. Until you're at the 600,000 mark, you don't count. So I am really hooked. I'm interested. Straight away, still on my iPhone, I haven't gone anywhere else. I find I like the way they're offering me the chance to listen to their music. Okay? Buy, and I choose what I want to pay for it. Listen, and I have a choice of music to listen to. I haven't moved from where I am. I'm just investigating who's this person following me. And the idea that I can both choose my price or get some fixed analog equivalent, because, you know, I'm also old enough to like valve amplifiers and vinyl. Okay? But they give me the choice. They say, you want to buy a vinyl LP? You can buy this, but there's a price. And $15 isn't, you know, a bad price to get a digital download and a vinyl album. They're within a sort of a range of not ripping me off. So I said, let me take a further look. And then I find out that the last album they've got, not only can I listen to every song there, but a number of those songs are available for free download. Not a sample, not 10 seconds. You know, not that, hang on a second, I'm just started trying to figure out what the song is and you want me to stop. They've taken the care to say, it's all there. Now I'm seriously hooked. Because they have engaged with me in a way that says, we've chosen you. You, because you are J.P. Ramaswamy, we found you. We were interested in the kind of music that you are interested in, and we'd like to give you an opportunity to listen to music. And when you have that opportunity, you pay what you like. Okay? You don't have to pay anything. There are some free downloads. You can listen to the whole album without leaving your phone. I mean, I still haven't moved on. It was important because I've been speaking at Sabit in Hanover last week, and I got hit by a passing suitcase. So I still have a bit of that limp. I had my leg up, you know, in order to say, they say rest and elevation is what you do when you have a, you know, a foot injury. So I wasn't going to be moving anywhere. This whole conversation was taking place with me sitting calmly relaxed. I look a little further. And you know that famous music critic, Quentin Tarantino? Okay? And I say, well, I've enjoyed the music in some of those films. And I also like NPR. So still within the iPhone app that I'm in, as a result of following them, sort of checking them out within my phone, without moving anywhere, 10, 12 minutes, I've been able to figure out they're real, they chose me, not because of I formed some sort of social class or grouping or target audience, me. They gave me the chance to try their wares. I could choose what I wanted to pay, and all in the simplicity and convenience of where I was at that time, what I was doing at the time. So I did the only thing I could do. I went and bought the album with the vinyl download, and that was still not even 10 minutes, maybe 12 minutes, I don't know. I'm not counting every second. Okay, what happens next? Before I barely finished, because I followed them, because they'd reached out and they seemed authentic and real, not sort of trying to sell or market to me. I'd made a connection. Within a minute, they'd actually come back to me and said, here's a free download of the album anyway. Okay? To me, as a DM. What's happening over here? Right? What has changed? You guys have heard from all the experts. I'm just going to give you a scientist's view sitting on the sidelines. Okay? We all know what this company is and where it is today. Okay? Dominant market leader, had all the smartest guys, had global presence, the whole lot, had all the patents to do with photography. You know, they defined the Kodak moment. You know this company? A little younger, but similar story. Dominant, global market leader, had the smartest kids, and had all the patents. They defined the word instant. About 10, 11 months ago, these two companies went to the wall. They finally reached the end of their journey to do with moving towards whatever number of chapters you have in America for bankruptcy. You know, 11, 12, 15, 16, whatever. And somewhere in that same quarter that this happened, because companies do go to the wall, you know, there is a natural selection that takes place within the industry. Not all the companies that were there, I haven't found that many companies making bows and arrows today. It's quite hard, right? Or horseshoes, quite hard, or VHS, okay? Amazing how quickly, or mini discs for that matter. So evolution and natural selection in the industry takes place. So it's not unusual to see companies that were one-time global market leaders disappear. What's strange is in that same quarter, a company whose sole business appeared to be to make Kodak look like Polaroid got bought for $1 billion. Okay, now you sort of stand up and say, what's going on here? And the only thing I can figure out, which is where the tone of this topic comes about, is that Kodak and Polaroid knew everything about their products and knew something about their customers. Instagram knew everything about their customers, and their customers knew about their customers. Okay? It is not just enough to know about your customers must know about their about other customers. It is that engagement of a community and an interaction between customers that starts transforming the world very. Okay? That's where I think we are. And then obviously the first thing you start doing is, ooh, hang on a second, my wife doesn't use Facebook, okay? She hates Facebook. Because you start wondering about what's all this noise about sharing? What happened to privacy? And I sort of think, people were sharing for a very long time. Sharing is in some ways not new, but it scares a lot of people because this whole premise of many of the things you've heard today involve a level of people giving up information that other people are going to use to serve them. And that can be scary. As I said, my wife hates Facebook. But when I left London, or when I left Windsor, I signed her into my Facebook. Because she somehow likes to see how my son's doing in Leeds, and one way of keeping in touch. My mother's on Facebook, and she's very active, because she knows it's a good way of being in touch with her grandchildren. So, we all have our views about privacy and sharing and everything else, but sometimes you have to bear in mind some of the truths behind it. We're connected in ways that we've never been before. You've heard the stories. The point for me is that Thomas Watson could have said, I think there's maybe a market for 5 computers in the world. That Ken Olson, a digital, never imagine every home would have a PC. That Bill Gates wondered why the web would have to connect every home. But today, for the first time in human history, we're at a point where it is possible for us to think that every human being is going to have a smart mobile device. Okay? That changes all the rules. 8 billion people. By the time we get there, it may be 8 billion people. I'm not keeping track. Counting gets boring after a while. But the truth is that change of everyone being connected is happening. And yes, we can worry about all the implications of sharing, but this is how I grew up. Okay? When I was at home in Calcutta, it wasn't a huge city. It was actually a collection of huge villages. And some of those huge villages had smaller villages in them. And at the age of 6 or 7, I remember going to my corner shop and asking for a packet of cigarettes. 6 years old. And the shopkeeper gave me the packet of cigarettes. He knew which pack to give me because he knew it was for my father. He knew where I lived, where my father lived, where my grandfather lived. He knew everything about me. He knew who in the family would have a nut allergy, who in the family drank too much. This was not new. Culturally, the local shopkeeper, the local neighbor, the local everybody knew everything about everyone. Village life and town life, for the best part of 100,000 years of our settlement, had people who knew everything about everyone. Not new. What was new was 150 years ago, the cost of transportation technology started dropping alarmingly, and people could leave. Until then, we lived and died within 10 miles of where we were born. And everybody didn't just know everything, but if you wanted to hide, you had to go 2 or 3 villages away to have a naughty night and hope nobody else from your village chose that same village that night. Okay? So think about privacy. You know, I'm all for privacy, but let's keep it in context. Right? I want to live in a world where I know my next door neighbor, where it is normal for a family to have a meal together, where it's okay for you to actually get out of the house, walk on the street and say hello to people, that not every home has just one person living in it. These are not bad things to have. That's called society. And that society got ripped apart because transportation technology became affordable to a level where everyone could live. And we have these huge, fantastic cities with millions of people who don't know each other. Okay, great. What has happened now is, in that last, you know, when I was growing up again, you know, I don't know where you guys live, what your personal lives are, but I always go to places where everybody knows my name. Okay? I want people who know what I drink. I want people who know what I, you know, want to eat. I want people who actually know me, but not because they're trying to target me or destroy me, but because I want a better service and I want a relationship. I want to be able to trust. These are not trivial things anymore. So whenever you think about all the things you're hearing today, put it in the context of saying, we used to live this way. Then it got broken because transportation technology distributed us. Now it's getting unbroken because communications technology is putting us back together. We all still, yes, have a right to privacy. That's not, no question about it. But start thinking that we live in a world of abundance. That one of my favorite economists said that every economic era is characterized by new abundances and new scarcities. A business model that takes account of both the new abundances as well as the new scarcities will succeed. Okay? So maybe information about what I do is in abundance and privacy has become a scarcity. Okay? Maybe everyone being connected is in abundance, attention has become a scarcity. And what happens is that things that become a scarcity command a premium. Because you have to be able to pay in order to convert that, because that's why it's called scarce. Right? Demand and supply, scarcity commands a premium. Abundance allows you to standardize a price and be able to commoditize. So rather than pretend things are not happening, maybe we just have to step back and say the changes that are taking place are creating new abundances and new scarcities. And whenever we look at the challenging places on how we act and how we think, we have to know. And I was talking to a gentleman from the Foursquare, you know, just before in the speaker room. And part of my joy, you know, when I used to use Foursquare regularly to say check in everywhere, what was I doing? I was thinking, you know, these people are the pioneers of the people who drew the maps 400 or 500 years ago. Because now there is a digital map. GPS locations are being labeled. And I was getting very excited because I was telling him, you know, there are some companies who are buying your feed in order to provide a service for blind people. Okay? Now the notes that are being connected to a digital location are being converted into audio and being fed into someone's sort of, you know, into their ear. It means getting the data right is important. But let's not constantly talk about the things that we lose through being connected all the time. You know, I am so connected, I have my, you know, up. I have my Pebble. You know, when someone calls me, I can choose which place. I have a pacemaker. I can connect my Twitter feed to turning around and saying, 11th August, 6:15 a.m., my heart went up to 200 beats a second for 2/5 of a second. What was I doing then? And I'm not going to tell you. Okay? But the point is, I can do it. Right? If I can start really looking at what I eat, what I exercise, what I do, where I am, and I'm with, and I'm feed that back, you've heard the reasons why this is valuable. It's not just for advertising, it's not just for selling products. It's for being able to solve so much that we've not been able to solve as individuals, that we can solve as a collective, provided we remember we're individuals as well. So, scarcity is a choice, abundance is a choice, understand where you are with it. For many, many years, especially during what is called the broadcast stage, this is how companies spoke to customers. Okay, customers didn't have a voice. The cost of actually recording the voice of the customer was very high, so everything was broadcast. And it's a little hard now for companies to accept this as a position, right? The megaphone has changed hands. But the reason for this is important. Because the cost of looking at what the customer was doing was very high, only very large institutions could afford it. And that meant that whether it was your inbound call centers or your kiosks or your integrated cash registers, the cost of actually saying this is what the customer is doing was very, very high. Not only did that happen, but it led to an environment where you only knew what the customer did in the past tense. Okay, one of my favorite stories of the 90s was when you're looking at the impact of the internet, and there was this apocryphal story of a car parking, you know, a car lot in Hicksville, USA, which was full of Ford pickups, you know? And a little old lady went to the place because she wanted to buy a Ford pickup, as little old ladies do in Hicksville, USA. And she wanted a white Ford pickup, but the only Ford pickups that were there in that lot were green. And the salesman was so good that she left with a green Ford pickup. And by the end of that week, he sold all the other green Ford pickups because he was a good salesman. Every day he called head office, left a message to say, please, please give me white Ford pickups. I know what my customers want. But somewhere in head office, someone with 16 MBAs said, there's a spike in green Ford pickups. More green Ford pickups, please. Okay? Because we went past predicts the future because that's all we could do. The cost of finding out anything else was too high. And those things meant that we were capturing transactions, and transactions led to this world that was even called transaction processing. Instead, look at the world we have today. Recognize this place, any of you? I saw it for the first time today. But I could go and find out quite a lot about that photograph if I wanted, you know, who took it. But it doesn't stop there. I could go into detail, what camera was used, when, how, focal length, environmental conditions, you name it. Because every single photograph comes with this thing called an EXIF file. And it tells you the photograph's mother, the photograph's father, where she went to school, the whole shooting match, because it is possible. And as you probably gathered during the day today, everything we do has the choice of having very rich metadata associated with it, if we so choose. Identity, timestamp, date stamp, location, friend network, preferences, profile, you name it. So much can get wrapped into this understanding. Which is why I started thinking, you know, I like what the Dimes did to me, because the Dimes didn't say, you know, you. Oh, it's a different story, by the way. You know, have you? How many of you in your life have filled a credit card form in? Okay. Now, I came from India. I didn't know anything about credit. And the first time I saw a credit card form when I came to England, sort of said, age. You know, 18 to 35, 36 to 44, 45 to 54. Why did someone choose these brackets? Okay. M and F. Does a person pay better if you're M or F? Okay, does your sex have something to do with your credit rating? Why? Okay, years at this address. Okay, why does this have a relevance? Okay, and I began to see that people had done a lot of statistical work, but they must have been based on some assumptions, on some model. You know, scientists like evidence. So I dug and dug and dug, and I found out, apparently there was a time when women were not equal. Okay? There was a time in society that women weren't equal and they were threatening to enter the workplace. And the guys in charge needed to make sure they knew exactly which ones and how. So 18 to 35 was, can't lengthen anything, that's childbearing time. 36 to 44 was, this is grandmother time and pretty good to lend. 45 to 54 was, they're lucky to be alive. And after 55, and I'm 55, you didn't exist. Okay? So the buckets that we use for analyzing some of these data relate to a time. Can you imagine? Women not equal. Okay? Well, that's the reality. That's the kind of systems we're using nowadays. We're using structures and data, and then we use, you know, analysis, sort of focus groups and surveys and all that. When the truth is, you can actually find out what the person is saying, because everyone's got a device to be able to say it. Everyone can share. So I want you guys just to be thinking of the implications of what happens when everyone is in a class of one. Right? Everyone uses phrases like the long tail. I don't actually want to be treated like every other 55-year-old. I don't want to be treated like every other Indian either, or for that matter, every other Indian who lives in Windsor in the UK and who has an English wife and who has three children, etc. None of those things matter. I want to be treated like me. And the cost of being treated like me is not as high as it used to be, because I don't need people to make assumptions about me. I will tell them what I am. I will give them my interest, provided they respect me and then say it's about me. That is the challenge. And I understand completely why we lived in a different life in the past, because the cost of doing it was too high. But that's not true anymore. Right? Can you imagine the time when you were a shopkeeper and that's all the information you had? Okay? Life was going to be a little hard. But guess what? Those shopkeepers who hand-wrote their bills and sat down knew all their customers, and nobody complained. Those relationships were based on trust, a knowledge and an investment in order to provide a better service. Right? Not to damage you, to provide you a better service. Even in those villages, by the way, there were curtains, and behind those curtains there were people who looked at you. Okay? The idea of spying on you is not new. It's happened ever since we had windows and curtains. The difference was that in a village you knew which house and you knew who. Which is why we need laws like data protection and privacy in order to say, if you are a digital window and you're going to be twitching that curtain, you have to declare what data you're taking, you're using, and for what purpose. That's what will allow us to continue with that trust, because the digital world is different from the analog world. The culture of sharing is not different. The wish for society to be together is not different. The ability to provide better service is not different. But we need, because in a digital world, you know, it's like, you know, a Christmas party when you're 21 years old in your first job may have photographs that you wish were not shared with everybody. And when I was 21, it was quite hard to share it. Now when my son's 21, it's become a little easier for a million people to see it. So we have to understand some changes have taken place, and those changes need protection. But let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater. The technology of saying, I can know who you are, what you did, who you did it with, when, how, provided you voluntarily give that, and there is the protection of law around misuse of that data, can help us change things to do with nutrition, to do with disease, to do with the use of energy, to, you know, and even simple social things like, now when I use a social connect to, you know, I told you I was a retired hippie, you know, so when I bought a Jet Hotel concert ticket for Royal Albert Hall at the end of May, because I already had my Ticketmaster login, and it said, you want to log in with Facebook, and I said, let me just try. And I stuck it in, and straight away I could tell which of my friends were going to be at the same concert. Okay? So there's value that comes from the sharing that is hard to get otherwise. And I learned this again from my son, where I was telling him, why do you want to listen to all this digital stuff? You know, listen to this analog vinyl on this valve amplifier, and that is real music. And he said, yes, Dad, but I can't share it. Okay? Children today have learned, the new generation, that at least part of the value of content is in its ability to share. Talking about sharing, When I was growing up in India, that's how people made food. And if I was going home and I wanted two friends to eat with me, three friends to eat with me, some magic happened in the kitchen. And my mother made sure we were all fed. You know, whether there's more water in the dal or a little more rice boiled, I don't know. But it happened. Then I came to England, and when I invited a couple of extra people, my wife looked at me and said, shh, we have steak. How are we going to share the steak with these extra people? And only once in your life do you want to cut pieces of steak in order to make two new steaks. Sharing does not happen just because you have the heart to share. You need to design it. But people are designing it. Okay? Part of the reason why we have all this information about an individual is because you can share. Right? Every digital object is associated with an ability to share an identity and all the metadata I spoke to you about. We are already in that world. It is that interconnectivity which leads to the ability of saying, you know, one of my favorite sayings from the open source world is what they call Linus's Law, named after Linus Torvald by Richard Stallman. It's actually Eric Rim. He said, given enough eyeballs, all bugs are shallow. Okay? So the ability to expose data and to be able to have it inspected, even security specialists understand the power of inspection in actually improving security, not reducing it. Things like Wikipedia work because of that inspection capability and the undo button, where the cost of damage is kept higher than the cost of repair. To damage Wikipedia, you have to spend a lot of time. To repair it, you just press undo. You can't do that with graffiti. You can't do that with chewing gum on a sideboard. When you have something like the commons, where a community has an effect, you have to balance these things. So design in sharing is integral to how humans are. So I go back to where I started. Today, we live in a world with everyone connected with an ability for people to find out about me. I am different from every one of you. Every one of you is different from everyone else. That difference matters. It's a difference that, sadly, during the industrial age, we tried to standardize the hell out of everyone, and most of the world's education and healthcare systems reflect what happened. Maybe some governments reflect that as well. It is the human, the individual, that matters. But that human acts in a collective. Because society is about collectives. And we have been like that throughout human history, ever since we learned what a settlement was. To me, social is the plural of personal. Why do I work where I work? Because I actually believe that if I can connect people, my customers, my staff, my distribution, the products itself, and be able to gain status updates in a published subscribe world, and to be able to share that, I can be individual and tailored for what I do. And this can help us solve, this connected community can help us solve many of the problems we've been unable to solve before. People laughed when I said some of this, but how many of you tracked what Nate Silver did during the last election? Okay? A week before the last American presidential election, there were two experts who said this is going to be a landslide. One of them was Bob Dylan, that great political commentator. Right? And the other was Nate Silver. Because Nate wasn't using surveys and sampling, he was using truths. And guess how many states he got right out of 50? 50. Okay? People laughed at him when he kept on saying, this is a landslide, this is going to be a big win. And he named state after state after state because he was using actual exit data rather than any statement to do with, I'll speak to three people. You know, I don't know why we want to live in a world where you want to look at a reflection of the moon in the water and think it is the sun. Just because it's cheaper. Actually, it's not cheaper. It's very, very expensive. You are making the choice whether you want to be Kodak or you want to be Instagram. With that, thank you very much. I'll open up for questions.